welcome to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. I am positive it is a Thursday. We had baseball last night. We had some good basketball last night. Why are you looking at me like that?
You're
positive it's a Thursday.
Yeah.
Jay Wright's here on
Friday. Okay, don't do that.
Jay Wright Friday. We had that on the schedule.
Yeah.
But
no.
Jay Wright's here.
Jay Wright is here today. We got a whole host. We got a bevy of wonderful people coming up. LeBron James and the Lakers finally get a win. Amari Cooper has officially arrived in Dallas. But we start in Boston, game two of the World Series, where the Red Sox were looking to take a 2-0 lead over the Dodgers. And here we go. It was drama. And here comes that drama.
Mm-hmm.
They sent David Price to the hill, bottom two, and Ian Kinsler singles to left to bring in the first run of the game, and the Red Sox are up 1-0. Let's jump to the fourth. We are tied at one. Knicks guy, Yasiel Puig, with a single to center. That'll bring home a Dodger. And L.A. takes the one-run lead. Price not thrilled, but he does go on to strike out Austin Barnes. Price goes six innings, gives up just three hits, two earned runs. Bottom five, now bases juiced. Game tied at two. J.D. Martinez. J.D. Martinez right there will rip a single to right. Red Sox will go up 4-2. Boston will hold on to win by that same score. They take a 2-0 World Series lead. Here's the winning pitcher, David Price, after the game.
David, back-to-back wins in the postseason. You had that difficult fourth. They took a 2-1 lead. How did you regroup?
Just continue to make pitches. I made a lot of pitches in that fourth inning. They had some really good at-bats, got off some good pitches, put some good swings on balls, and these guys picked me up just like they have all year long. So that was huge.
You said in game four of the ALCS, warming up in the bullpen, you found something. Since then, two brilliant performances. What has changed?
I take a lot of pride in being able to evolve from pitch to pitch or day to day or game to game, whatever it is. You know, just being able to make adjustments on the fly, and it's paid off.
You've been through a lot in the postseason. You had the crowd on your side tonight. How gratifying is this moment for you?
It feels good. It definitely feels good. But like I said before this playoffs happened, I'd rather go winless and we win a World Series and me go, you know, 4-5-0 and we lose. So you know, we're playing good baseball right now. That's a very good team over there. So we need to go to LA and not make it come back to Boston.
You know, speaking of winless, David Price had gone 0-9 in his first 10 postseason starts before taking the mound last night. So great win for him. Nick, what do you think was the key to Boston winning game two against the Dodgers?
Listen, I'm happy for David Price because it's now two starts in a row that he's pitched well. And he was excellent at home this whole entire season. And then we saw in the beginning of the postseason, once again, game two of the ALDS, we saw, David Price, how's this going to go for him? And since then, he's turned it around well. But to me, there were two keys to the game. One on the Dodgers side and one on the Dodgers managerial side. On the Dodgers offense side, I mean, 16 straight retired batters to end the game. That's the most consecutive retired batters to end a game since in a World Series since Don Larsen's perfect game.
Wow.
Wait, that was 27 up, 27 down. This was 16 up, 16 down in the game. And then on the managerial side, and I hate to be this guy, but for the second straight game in a high leverage spot, Dave Roberts goes to Ryan Madsen. Yeah. Again, he goes to Ryan Madsen. In game one, it's 3-3, bottom five, men on base. You pull Kershaw, Rat Madsen for four-pitch walk, and all of a sudden, a couple batters later, it's 5-3. He allows both of his inherited runners to score. Last night, Dodgers have a 2-1 lead. Base is loaded, and you go to Ryan Madsen. Five-pitch walk. Now it's a tie game. And then a single. He allowed all his inherited runners to score. He's got the most misleading 0.0 ERA anyone's ever had in a World Series because he's allowed 5 of 5 inherited runners to score. So Madsen comes in, gives up the lead, and then the bats don't get on base again the rest of the game, that's a recipe to fall down 0-2 in the World Series.
Yeah, that's a huge part of the story. David Price, the ability to be able to back up the one performance that he had at home. I think it was really important for them to get the win and for him to have the confidence at home. You talked about, Jenna, how bad he was in the playoffs. He was excellent in his last start, followed it up with another good start. And the thing you talk about, clutch, Mattson not being clutch, between Price getting these last two wins, pitching the way he did, J.D. Martinez batting the way he did in clutch. That money that they spent on these two guys, when you talk about all these high salaries in baseball, last night the Red Sox, two guys that they invested a lot of money in, they came through in the clutch because Mattson on the mound, J.D.'s able to get the hit, not a huge hit, but he's able to put the bat on the ball, put it in play, and that was the decisive, that was the margin of victory there. So Red Sox, two of their guys coming through. You talking about the manager. The manager makes a decision. The guy doesn't come through for him in Mattson. It makes the manager look bad.
Dave Roberts was already a Red Sox legend for as a player. Now he's going to be a Red Sox legend as a Dodgers manager in the way he didn't want to be.
To play clutch ball in the World Series is so difficult. The Red Sox scored all the runs with two guys on, which is
with
impressive.
Two outs, rather,
which is so impressive. Okay, so now the series moves to L.A. What do we expect? Can they get back into the series?
Well, I want to stay on your two-out point for a moment. The Red Sox have scored 68 runs this postseason. 36 have come with two outs.
That's amazing.
In this series, they've scored 12 runs. 9 have come with two outs. Their clutch hitting has been spectacular. They were one of the best offenses of the last decade in the regular season, but that was in all situations. Mm-hmm. In the playoffs, it has been clutch hitting. Now, typically, to answer your question, Jenna, we would say, all right, so now the series goes back to L.A. or goes to L.A., the advantage goes to the Dodgers. But how many road games have the Red Sox lost this playoff, see?
None.
Zero. They're undefeated on the road in the postseason, so I don't know how much of an advantage that holds. I thought the Dodgers had to split the first two in Fenway to have a realistic chance to win the series like I thought they would. Falling down 0-2, it's not over. I understand, like, the Red Sox just held serve, so to speak, but it doesn't bode well for them.
Yeah, and we can't forget how close these were. They are a ball falling in, catching a foul ball to start the game, potentially game to stop that momentum. Yep. Last night, getting a guy out. I mean, Mattson comes in. He's not even close. So it wasn't as if that was a great at bat. He let the batter off the hook because he couldn't even get close. So for me, I believe this series is a lot closer than the 2-0. So I believe the Dodgers can get right back into it back in Los Angeles.
And the Dodgers have to be happy with their pitching yesterday. Hyun-Jun Ryu, pitched fine. And then after Mattson, their guys did a great job. You can't go 5+ innings and not have a single base runner. Like, that is in a, it's not like they were down 10-1. Okay, we're just
they were trying to prevent the storyline from game number one where they left all those. They were 1-7 with runners in scoring position. So, hey, we're just not even going to get them in
just
scoring.
Have nobody on base. That's one way to go about it, I suppose.
Last 10 teams to win the first two games of the World Series have gone on to win it all. So Red Sox hoping.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, here you can just
you can have
that card right there. Got to take a break. Coming up, let's talk some Laker basketball. How did LeBron feel after his first Lakers win? Hear from the King himself next on First Things First. All right, moving on. LeBron James and the Lakers looking for their first win of the season, taking on the Suns and taking out the Suns. The King finished with 19 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds, and LeBron's supporting cast helped out 6 players in double figures, 7 including LeBron. Lakers exploded for a 44-point second quarter. They win big 131-113. Here is LeBron James in his first win in the purple and gold.
It feels good for us to know what we've been doing over the training camp in these first few games to continue to get better. I think we've gotten better tonight, and we want to try to continue that going forward.
What was the difference in the second quarter that helped you guys pull away?
We got defensive stops. We didn't foul. We kept guys off the free throw line. That's something we've been talking about for a long time, and then we shared the ball offensively.
All right, so the Lakers finally get their first win. Nick, did we learn anything about LeBron and the Lakers after they beat the Suns?
Not substantially, no. We would have learned a lot if they lost. If they lost, it would have been, through only 4 games, time to press a bit of a panic button because the Suns are not a good team. The Suns got a bunch of young guys they're playing to try to figure out who their future is, what their future is. This is a game you can't lose if you have LeBron James on your team, even with no Ingram and no Rondo. We did learn they adjusted the starting lineup in the way that I said I thought they would and thought they should. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, you can go to the bench. Josh Hart, you can go to the starting lineup. And the other thing we learned in the first half was took LeBron about 10 quarters this year to get the engine fully revving. Game one, okay. Game two, not great. First half of game three, bad. And then second half of game three against the Spurs to the first half last night. Last night in the first half, 17-7-7. That gave him his last four quarters of basketball a combined line of 45-10-17. And that's what powered them in the comeback in against the Spurs and powered them to a 20-point lead in the first half last night. This game was over at halftime. LeBron played some in the third quarter, none in the fourth. The Lakers got some rest, which they're going to need because they play tonight against an undefeated Nuggets team.
Yeah, I like the fact that they did change the lineup. Josh Hart, he should be. They should give him a chance to try to start. He gives them a little bit different athleticism. They give him another guy that cut to the bucket compared to KPC, what he's going to be able to do. And he just has not played well as a starter. He has not been the three-point shooter that we thought he was going to be. And with them having lack of shooters, if he's not going to be special doing that, you have to try to go about it a different way. So I did like that. Didn't like how they played defense, giving up 30 points in that first quarter, a lot better in that second quarter. When they get against better competition, I think you'll be able to evaluate them more. We knew they had to win this game. Like, we would open up the show if they had lost this game.
When it comes to defense, is that just an effort thing? Is that something that comes with when they need to play good defense? Why are they struggling so much on that side?
All right, so listen, first of all, this is NFL style, got to adjust your eyes. Through a week of the NBA season, I don't know what good defense is. I don't know who's playing it outside of Denver. Like, right now, we are record-breaking pace as far as points scored. Everyone is playing up and down the court. So
But there's an explanation for that. There's a reason for that.
Go ahead.
Because the NBA rules, they're allowing people, what they say is they want more movement.
Freedom of movement.
So the hand checking, the grabbing jersey, the clutching, all these things have been called. That's why the players have said they don't know what type of refereeing they're going to see moving forward, which has led to outbursts in point scoring, just like the NFL.
So it's two things. It is the rules, which is, so the more fouls called, more free throws, that leads to more points. But then also the butterfly effect of that is, teams get in foul trouble, so they play softer defense. They don't want to send you to the line. You're in the bonus, and you have a free way to the hoop. The other thing is how many teams, almost the entire league, is playing over 100 possessions per game. Like, they're running up and down the court. They're playing the fastest pace we've seen in the NBA since the year Oscar averaged the triple-double when it was super inflated pace numbers. So when you have more possessions, like allowing 113, it's almost like last year allowing 103. So we have to adjust it.
But is that sustainable? Because LeBron James is not going to keep up that pace.
Well, it's the whole league right now. It's not just the Lakers. The Lakers were a fast team last year. It's the whole league. So I'm saying that. Now, with that said, even compared to the rest of the league, the Lakers have been a bad defensive team. I don't think it's effort. I think right now it's a lack of continuity. Like, the best
defensive
teams. Not knowing,
not trusting.
Are teams that have been together for a long time. Teams that know each other. You got to move as one. The Lakers are not. They are not that right now, and I feel like there's almost a mentality when you play at that pace, and I think it's right now permeating the whole league, which is, if we give up a bucket, we're going to run right back down and get it. And when you play slow, and it feels like, man, if we get down six, it's a big deal, that's not the case. So it's all of those factors coming into one, and the most important part of your defense is going to be rim protection. JaVale McGee's not a great rim protector, and he's the only center they got. So, like, there's a lot of reasons they're going to be bad defensively, at least for the time being.
Can they sustain it? I think it's going to be tricky once we get to the playoffs. What we've seen, Jenna, is up and down during the regular season. In the playoffs, the referees, they slow it down. It becomes more physical. So I think it is a great question is, will we see this after the All-Star break and into the playoffs? This is something that we have to continue to watch.
But if they're not better, if they need to have their best defensive game of the season tonight. They're playing a team. If it'll be on national television, I encourage people to stay up late and watch it. If you don't watch the Nuggets a lot, it's not just your guy Gary Harris, Jamal Murray. They have one of the most skilled big men in basketball, Nikola Jokic. He passes the – He's a better passing version of Draymond offensively, right? Mm-hmm. He's a better – the reason I say Draymond is Draymond can play the center and get a double-digit assist game. He is one of the most skilled offensive big men in the league, if not the most skilled offensive big men outside of Anthony Davis. The Nuggets will eat you alive if you're not sound defensively. Like, they are going to be an excellent offense throughout the year, and they're going to be able to run their offense through their big man. If the Lakers don't have their best defensive game of the year tonight, they'll lose to the Nuggets and fall to 1-4.
What changes with this team when Rondo and Ingram get back?
They're going to be spitting on people. Rondo is about, excuse me.
Do you, well, let me ask you this, see? Kuzma goes to the bench, right? And I know you don't think.
I just think the growing pains continue because they're trying to find themselves, which they're going to be able to do absent of these other two players. And then when you come back, do you put Rondo back into the lineup? If I think Lonzo Ball's healthy, I bring Rondo off the bench and I stay with Josh Hart. Like, I stay with. I got a problem with Ingram and Kuzma, though, because I just believe Kuz, for longer term with this roster, is better suited. But they've got a lot invested in Ingram, and he's going to get those minutes back.
Ingram's going to get those minutes back. You're not going to have Lonzo. The Lakers will play very few minutes all year with Lonzo and Rondo on the court at the same time because it's too much of a redundant skill set, not enough shooting. The thing to watch with Rondo is what we've seen over these last six quarters of basketball for the Lakers is slowly but surely, why don't we run some more high pick and roll with LeBron? Why don't we let LeBron dictate the offense? And when if that's the case, then Rondo's got no utility on the team. Rondo is not on the team to not have the ball in his hands. He's on the team to run the offense. So I'm curious, once Rondo comes back, are we going to see more of that style of offense? Now, they've got another game without Rondo and two more games without Ingram.
All right, let's take a break. Get to some football on the other side. Coming up, how quickly can Amari Cooper be a factor with the Cowboys? Next, first things first. Welcome back. Thursday Night Football returns tonight as Deshaun Watson and the Texans take on the Miami Dolphins. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video. Time now for us to go viral. Craig Kimbrell took care of business last night, sitting the Dodgers down 1-2-3 in the ninth. Pre-game, Kimbrell had this hilarious moment with Frank Thomas. Take a listen.
Frank, this is for you.
Hey, Frank, I'd like to know what size jacket you wear because, you know, your shoulders are so big, you know, still so long after you got done playing. I need to know what size you wear.
For one of the game's greatest closer. I'm a 2XL tall.
2X?
2XL tall.
I'm 2X.
But if it's designer or anything else, it's like a 54XLT. You know, that's basically it. 54.
Two times 2X.
Is that answering the question, or is Frank begging Kimbrell to pay for a new coat?
Well, that's what I think it is.
Yeah. Sound like you like my coat. I'll take a brown
Frank
one like this,
9X.
Too.
I'll take a brown one.
9X.
Can the guy pitch in the World Series first, Frank?
Frank, listen. We saw Frank and his lovely family eating breakfast at the All-Star game, right? Is that what it
yes.
was?
Yeah, in D.C.
In a hotel. Frank is a lot of things. A 2X is not one. Come on, man.
He's doing them commercials and everything.
Yeah. See, I'm a large. You at least used to be an XL. Now, I know you're down to your playing weight, but if you're 6'2", I feel like you're still probably XL. There ain't no way Frank's just 1X bigger than you. No
Frank's
chance.
A big dude, man.
Frank's a
big, big dude. You know?
And how do you go from I'm a double X, but if it's custom, I'm a 54 tall?
Man. I'd rather buy him a hat than a coat. His head's smaller than his shoulders.
Time now for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. Patriots running back Sony Michel missed practice Wednesday with a knee injury. He's expected to miss a week or two, while Rob Gronkowski was also absent with a back injury, but could suit up Monday night against the Bills. Chris, how worried should the Patriots be about these injuries?
Oh, you should be concerned. And Nick brought it to my attention. Hey, Chris, Gronk, man, is back. And then he mentioned
Mike Lombardi, a guy once upon a time I did a podcast with. Now he works in different places. But he said, how much football does Gronk have left? He said that it looks like Gronk is slowing down.
Yeah, he thought he saw something there.
He said he thought he saw that Gronk was slowing down.
And then, I made a little joke about it. Oh, I don't know what he's watching and everything. But Mike Lombardi, I believe, is on to something. When you start not showing up, a late scratch, back spasm, that lets you know something is wrong with that back.
And you know Gronk wants to play because he's got those
incentives.
He's got $3.3 million worth of incentives tied to playing time, tied to being on the active roster, and tied to production. The more games he misses, the almost impossible to hit those numbers.
I have the same concern for Sony Michel. Jenna, he's had a bad knee through college.
All right, moving on to basketball. Jazz took down the Rockets 100-89 last night behind Donovan Mitchell's 38 points. Rockets fall to 1-3, but wait, there's more. James Harden had to leave early with a hamstring injury. Nick, how concerned are you with the Rockets' slow start?
I'm more concerned with Harden's hamstring. Listen, the Rockets, 0-2 at home, 1-3, but I didn't expect them to win last night without Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. Like, the Jazz are an excellent basketball team.
Yes.
I believe one of the six best teams in the NBA. But Harden, to tweak a hamstring early in the year, that's something to watch because those soft tissue injuries can plague you. And the Rockets do not have the depth necessary to lose Paul or Harden for an extended period.
You remember the season after the Warriors had the 73 wins and they didn't win the championship? I believe that the Rockets could have that same theme. We're not going to be as good in the regular season. Let's get to the postseason healthy. We believe we're as good as Golden State, which they showed last year outplaying them through six games, but they need to keep everyone healthy. So I think that might be the philosophy. It's not going to be about record for the Rockets.
Be extra cautious?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Sixers and Bucks now.
I talked to the general manager. He's one of my sources.
No.
Giannis Antetokounmpo dropping an impressive 32 points, 18 rebounds, 10 assists, triple-double. Milwaukee beating up on Philly. They improved to 4-0 for the first time since 2001. Nick, how good did the Greek freak look last night?
He looked like the guy I thought he was going to be this year. Got himself a coach. Is fully and formally developing his game. How about this as an underrated stat of the season? Giannis's rebounds through four games, 18, 15, 15, 18.
Yes.
I mean, dude's averaging 16.5 rebounds a game. 29, 17, and 7 is essentially what he's averaged through four games. They're undefeated. He's been outstanding. No, I mean, I'm not surprised by Giannis. I am impressed by Giannis.
Yeah, I've learned something from Nick Wright. At one point in this guy's career, he's going to be the best player in the world. And you're starting to see that early this season. The new coach, you can see him trying to evolve his game, doing some things more physical, getting on the glass. His range is still going to take some time to be patient with, but outstanding talent that just continues to evolve night after night.
He's at least shooting threes this year. Now, he's only made one, mm-hmm. but he's at least shooting them, which means he must be making them in practice, and teams are going to have to at least give cursory pressure to him on those, which is what's allowing him to cut through the lane with such.
So we got like 2 years before we start seeing Ben Simmons even shoot him.
Well, no, hopefully by about midseason.
Why are you stuttering?
All right, let's finish this up with the Warriors. Steph Curry dropping in a cool 51 points on 11 three-pointers in three quarters of play, leading the Warriors to the 144-122 win. Here's Kevin Durant on Curry's chances to win his third MVP this season.
I think the MVP nowadays is the up-and-coming star of the NBA award, I think. But, you know, you just got to take somebody to do something like this tonight to kind of break through and change that narrative. And, you know, players that have been in the league for a while that won a couple MVPs, you know, I'm sure the voters tend to overlook them, not, you know, maliciously, but it's just the fact that they're looking for the next player. But, you know, you got to wake them up with games like that.
I actually, Nick, I think it's twofold. I think it's what Kevin Durant said, and I think the other part of it is Steph Curry plays for the best team in the league and what some people would call the most hated team in the league because mm-hmm. they're so stacked. And because of that, I think people forget to look at the details, to watch a guy like Steph Curry, who's just fun to watch, who enjoys the game, who has fun while he's playing the game, who doesn't have a million, you know, feet of whatever baggage that comes mm-hmm. along with it. And I think because of that, we lose sight of the fact that he very well could be an MVP candidate again this year.
Well, right now he is. I mean, Steph has won two MVPs. One of them, there's no question he deserved. The year they won 73 games. The other one was very close the year before that. But he hadn't deserved an MVP. It's not like Steph's been snubbed on any MVPs. Now, in order for him to win an MVP.
No, but his overall his likability because the team he plays on and kind of the shine that was on his career. Because you even pointed this out. Man, it was refreshing to see him warming up before the game. Like any kid, you don't have to be 6'6", 6'8". You don't have to be able to. His skill level and how people love to see that, it's changed the NBA. You love
it. No doubt. Listen, but the Steph's ability, the curve for him to win MVPs got a lot steeper when Durant came there. Mm-hmm. Not just because of higher expectations for the Warriors, not just because of what Durant's talking about there, but because his numbers were going to go down. They did go down. Now, this year, he's been awesome. He or Giannis or Kawhi, those have been your three best players in the league so far this year. Those three guys, they have been the most impactful on winning. Their teams have lost a combined one game. Those have been your three best guys. You can make a case for Steph, make a case for those other two guys. But Durant's comments about it's the up-and-coming MVP award, like, I mean, okay, maybe. I mean, that's how Durant won his, by the way, because we were sick of LeBron winning his, and Durant had that great year. Mm-hmm. But you can win an MVP as an established player. Harden wasn't some up-and-coming guy. He had finished second two of the previous 3 years before he won his. It's hard for the Warriors to win him, though.
I think Durant might be talking about why LeBron doesn't win. Because I believe Kevin Durant has a lot of respect for LeBron. And one time there he mentioned that he was the best player. I believe KD thinks LeBron's the best player. And if the way he described it as up and coming compared to him and LeBron, then what he was saying would be correct.
Sure. Steph is not disqualified from winning this award. He is going to have performances like this because people mm-hmm. do take the Warriors for granted. They do play out on the West Coast, which are late games, like as people who are now staying up to watch LeBron are realizing each and every night. Like, but the other aspect of it is you've got to decide what's important to you. Are regular season awards, regular season records, home court advantage, is that important to you? The year Russ won it, it was important to him.
Yes.
He wanted that triple-double record. Mm-hmm. He wanted to average the triple-double.
And did he play differently because of it?
Well, no, he just had the ball in his hands more. Russ is an outlier because Russ always plays at that level. Harden last year, the Rockets, it was important they get to 65 wins. If the Warriors have the best record in the league, Steph's going to be eligible. It's hard to give any of those guys league-wide MVP when they have the most talent and other teams finish with a better record.
He does look like he's on a mission, though. He looks like he's on the mission to be able to send a message. The last two seasons, entering the regular season, he entered a little banged up from a long offseason and had a couple knee problems that he started the season.
Coming in healthy this year.
Yes.
And Jenna, I think what now Kevin Durant's very interesting. He was the one talking there. Because I think Steph's maybe internal motivation he won't talk about has to do with Durant. And the fact that Durant just became the given. Oh, he's the second best player in the world. Kevin Durant is. Mm-hmm. He's the finals, two-time finals MVP. He's the engine that has pushed them through these two NBA, these last two championships. There is a strong argument to be made that Steph is still the second best player in the world, as he was before Durant got there. And he has gotten passed in that hierarchy. Some people have Anthony Davis jumped over him. Last year, people had Harden jumped over him. So I think Steph has a bit of a chip on his shoulder in that regard. Is he going to become one of your guys?
I'm afraid he might.
I would, Jenna, that would delight me.
Okay.
That would delight me.
Really? Now,
yes, because you need to actually have one of your guys be good at their sport.
Okay.
As opposed to all your other like Case Keenum, nonsense.
Alex Smith.
Exactly. Alex, so you're going to pick an actual good player to root for.
I'm on the Steph Curry bandwagon.
You're a big fan of Steph's, it would appear.
I like the name. Amari Cooper is officially touched down in Dallas. The Cowboys' newest receiver had his first official team practice yesterday. Next step, building chemistry with Dak Prescott during the team's bye week. Step after that, win all the games and make it to the Super Bowl. Baby steps. Cooper, just traded from the Raiders, immediately becomes the Cowboys' number one receiver.
You know, it's a fresh start. This is a good team. I'm just giving them something to build on, I guess you can say. And it's America's team. Who wouldn't be excited? You know, I have to stack the days together, obviously, you know, learn the system and just be ready to go out there when my name is called. You know, all the other stuff will come.
Let me tell you guys at home a little something about Chris Carter. We ran a little 3 seconds of video of Amari Cooper running some route. I don't know what.
At practice.
Yeah, practice. Nick and I kind of looked at. Did you see what he just ran?
Did you see the route he ran? I just told him no.
Nope.
I was like, no, I didn't actually.
You're so keyed in. Tell us what you saw.
And it's especially when you've taught someone something, and there's certain principles to the routes that I've tried to teach him, and one is to be able to keep his chin up. And even when he's stopping his legs at the top of his route, keep his arms moving so it gives the appearance as if he's still running. It creates a perception to the defensive back that you're going to keep running compared to stopping. And seeing him continue to do that at this stage of his career, something I taught him when he was 17 years old, that right there is exciting to me, because being good at wide receiver is a lot of fundamentals. And Amari has been very, very good at those. That's why he was very good at Alabama. He was a mature route runner. Now, once he's gotten to the pros, he lost his confidence, started dropping the football on easy catches. So I believe that can come back to him. But as a fundamental route runner, he's one of the most mature wide receivers that I had seen and had worked with. And I believe that he should get that back there in Dallas with the wide receiver coach, Sanji Lau, who I have a lot of confidence, used to coach with the Jets here.
My takeaway was not what we saw on video. It was what we heard. I realized I'd never heard the guy speak. I didn't even know what Amari Cooper sounded like. Like, when I saw it, I was like, oh, wow. Like, I should have realized that, because we've been talking about him all week.
Yeah.
But you've talked about how soft-spoken he is, how he's a different type of personality than a lot of the star wide receivers in the league. You've also said how he can line up in all three spots on the field, the X, the Y, or in the slot. I would imagine, and he's been very productive in the slot. I would imagine with Dallas, he won't be in the slot very often, because the one productive wide receiver they have right now is Cole Beasley, and that's the only place they can line him up in, right? Like, they can't put Cole Beasley on the outside ever. So he's Amari.
And it's a harder spot to learn in the offense. What the Dallas Cowboys should be trying to do right now is add more speed and punch to their offense. Michael Gallup, the high draft pick that they drafted this year, has had a couple of the big plays. He had to stop and go in Washington. Him and Amari should play outside. Cole Beasley have established himself as a dependable slot receiver, and that should be their number one formation that they should try to play out of, because what it will do is put more speed on the field. Amari Cooper, he is a good route runner, but the speed of him and Gallup out there, I believe it puts more threat into the defense, and I believe that big-time passing game down the field with that power running game, I believe they could be married together. That's the most effective way, I believe, for the Dallas Cowboys to be able to move forward offensively.
Looking at this Cowboys offense, adding Amari Cooper's speed and punch, like you talked about, how much better could they really be? How much of a difference can just adding a little bit of speed to your offense really make?
Right now, when you watch Dallas, Jenna, they don't get any easy yards. They don't get, because coach designed plays. Like, he might design an outside zone play. It's designed maybe to get 4 to 6 yards. But when you have a special running back like Zeke, he makes someone miss, and you get all these yards that the coaches, they don't have in the game plan. When Dallas, when will they get that? When will they have a short screen to someone and they run off with it? They had a big screen to Zeke earlier in the season, but they don't get a lot of that stuff. They have to work hard. Scott Linehan and Jason Garrett, they have to work hard to build, get every yard that they can get. If they can get some stuff that's easy, if they can diagram some play action pass where they send two guys deep down the field, pick a guy, and let it fly. That's what Dan Marino said. Championships we ain't winning if I'm not slinging. So that's what I believe that Dak, he has to be able to grow the deep passing game to be able to go with the physical running attack that they
have. When you said the formation that they should be in the majority of the time, I think it's the formation that last year or 2 years ago under McAdoo, the Giants ran almost every single time, which is three wide. So you're talking about Amari is the X, Gallup is the Y, Beasley in the slot, one tight end, and Zeke in the backfield, right?
Yes.
The reason that I think that actually could be, if Dak can just regain a little bit of what we know he had his rookie season, it can take this offense from moribund, from bottom five in the league, to just league average, which is all the offense has to be, is league average with the way their defense plays. Because you don't have a great defense to play against them. Because if you just say, we're going to stop Zeke, we're going to make you prove it to us, you have a very good route runner in Beasley who can run those option routes. And you have a guy in Cooper that I believe, even though the last year and a half he has not been productive, can beat single coverage. I think he has been facing fronts and defenses that when they play the Raiders, they say, we don't want Derek Carr and Cooper and Crabtree when he was there to beat us. They weren't so worried about the Raiders running game. And if if just at a few times a game, defenses say, all right, you know what, we're more worried about 19, we're more worried about the passing game, that's when Zeke can kill you. Because mm-hmm. Zeke is great at shedding that first tackler. And if the reason that he's when he's held down, it's not necessarily because he gets tackled on first contact. It's because after that first contact, there's so many people around him that they swarm to him. Mm-hmm. If you only have six guys in the box, even just seven guys in the box, if he can make that first guy miss or shed that first tackler, that can be an explosive run play because that's what's been killing Dallas, a lack of explosive
plays. The one thing the organization's got to do, because Amari is a soft-spoken guy, you have to build Decatur. Now, he's not Dez Bryant. Dez Bryant's doing a lot of interviews, doing a lot of commercials, doing a lot of things. He's not that way. The reason why Amari thrived at Alabama, because he thrived in that culture. Nick Saban took care of all the outside noise. Amari didn't have to do a lot of interviews. You didn't hear a lot of stuff about him. So he thrived as a very quiet person because Nick Saban knew that. That's the reason why you haven't heard him too many in sound bites and things like that. The Dallas Cowboys need to realize he's not the last number 19 they had, Keyshawn Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
He's not Terrell Owens. He's not Michael Irvin. Don't try to make him into those guys. Let him be himself. I think he can thrive there in Dallas.
Cowboys have a bye this week. I guess Amari and Dak Prescott will spend some of that time building chemistry, working on timing and all of it. But how soon before we see him completely in the fold in this Cowboys offense?
We got to play him next week, Jenna. I mean, they're in a crisis. They got to play him. You can trade the first-round pick for him. Jerry wants the team and to see his fans that, yes, it was valuable. And I just believe you can do a lot of things with the wide receiver. 2 weeks in training. He's coming off a concussion in London. He was off last week, but he was back on the field with the Raiders practicing. He's back on the field with the Cowboys practicing. Yes, I need to see him 30 plays, 30 to 40 plays in that first game, and let's call it and run it. I don't care what the coverage is. Amari, beat your guy. That's what we have to be able to do, especially for the first couple weeks until we get him acclimated until a larger portion of the offense.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, can the Texans build on their four-game win streak tonight against the Dolphins? A little Thursday Night Football preview next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we're joined by former Super Bowl champ Greg Jennings. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning.
Good to see you. Nice to see you. Good to have you here. All right, Greg, it's Thursday, which means two things. One, it is almost Friday. And two, we got some football on Fox tonight. 4-3 Dolphins taking on the AFC South's first place team, the 4-3 Texans. Miami will trot out a familiar face in Brock Osweiler, who used to be the Texans quarterback. Meanwhile, don't look now, but the Texans are quietly riding a four-game win streak. See, I'll start with you on this one. What do Deshaun Watson and the Texans need to do to keep this train moving along?
Man, they do have momentum. You don't want to be able to lose it. And especially, I just believe when you have a player like Brock Osweiler who has that type of history with that team, as a defense, I just believe Jadeveon Clowney, J.J. Watt and them, they would take it upon themselves to be like, today is not going to be a good day for Brock Osweiler. I mean, the Texans went out. He was going to change their franchise. Now, Jenna, they didn't do the thing that Fox did with you. They did several interviews with you. And I told them on the first couple, y'all need to hire. But, no, they were going about doing their own business.
There must be someone else.
So they really think they know what they were doing and everything. So I just let them go about their business. Now, the Texans, Jenna, they gave Brock Osweiler this money without even talking to him in person. They talked to him over the phone. Agreed in principle. Didn't even do a thorough examination and everything.
They're like, are you good? He's like, yeah. They're like,
yeah,
okay, we'll
the same
you.
Way that I tried to hire you and everything. I said, yeah, Jenna's good. Let's go do this. But they went about it. It took us to get there. But Brock Osweiler, him having a good day coming back against the Texans, oh, man, I think that would be devastating, not only to the organization, not only to the momentum they've created, but to their head coach. And Bill O'Brien, let's not forget. I mean, this guy's not out of the woods now, man. I mean, I know they have momentum, but, man, what he has done from an offensive standpoint, to me, I still question. You know, is he that guy for the Texans and Deshaun Watson? Oh, I know Deshaun Watson is the future of the Texans, but is Bill O'Brien? Because one of his mistakes, he's getting ready to play against them. Very injured Dolphins team. It would be devastating if the Texans were to lose this game, Greg, to an injured Fins team coming there on a Thursday night.
That's it right there. The Dolphins have so many injuries on offense specifically, and when you look at the Texans, where they're strongest is on the defensive side going up against that Dolphins offense. You got Kenny Stills out. You got Albert Wilson out. You got Ryan Tannehill out. It's a short week. all the momentum should be on and with the Houston Texans. And to your point that you made, which was an interesting point, Brock Osweiler, when you have a guy who's been in your locker room, who did not get it done, players know that. Coaches know that. The coaches are a little disturbed. I'll use that word gently. Mm-hmm. They're disturbed at what you did not provide, and because they stuck their neck out for you and you didn't provide something.
Which means what? You go after that a
You go after that guy. You paid him, like you said.
You had to trade away a second-round pick to get rid of him. Gave him $36 million guaranteed, and then you traded a second-round pick to get him out of the building.
Yes. But that changes the way you game plan against him?
No, it's not so much that you change the way you game plan against him. You talk about these things, and guys understand, look, we're not letting this guy beat us. And Brock Osweiler, in his defense, he's been playing pretty good. He hasn't been playing poorly. Mm-hmm. So I think they'll get after Brock Osweiler, and it'll be a long night for the Miami Dolphins.
As Greg talked about, Brock Osweiler, and Adam Case, you got to give him a lot of credit.
Yes.
Brock's playing the best football in this relief duty of Tannehill of his career. So it's one of those kind of things, Jenna, that you and I, we've been in the business long enough. You know, these two little young bucks and everything. This is the first real big company that they work with, Greg playing football. And, of course, Nick out there just making his way through life. But what you would like to show, Jenna, people that you potentially work for and everything is that they didn't have confidence in you and that you were more fit for the job. I know you and I, we come to work with a little edge on us because of things we've experienced in the past. I believe that Brock takes the field with that same chip that, man, I'd like to be able to prove something to this organization.
A lot of laundry coming out.
Well, the reason why he takes the field like that is because when you look at the history of he and Adam Gase drafted him out in Denver.
Yes.
So they have the relationship. There's a trust. There's something that he saw in Brock Osweiler coming out of the draft into Denver that he was in agreement
with.
The
only decent football Brock's ever played in his career has been under Adam Gase.
Absolutely.
The temporary stint in Denver, replacing Peyton Manning, and now these two games. Because he was terrible. I was in Houston. Houston, I was making my way in the world. I was in Houston when he was the quarterback there. There is some, I don't want to say hurt feelings because it's pro sports, but he wasn't a good teammate. I'm going to tell you this. He was not a good teammate.
Wasn't
he threw
well
guys
liked.
Under the bus.
Yep.
He was Bill O'Brien, who always tries to, almost to a fault, before he got to Sean Watson, make excuses for his quarterback, would always try to pick up Brock, and Brock would not return the favor. So there is an extra chip on the Texans' shoulder in this game. On the Texans' side of things, though, this is the most fraudulent four-game winning streak in the history, not of the NFL, of sports. I have any team in
any. I mean, they won 20 in a row. No, they won four.
No, listen. Okay. I just want the audience to know how they got this four-game winning streak. Because here's how their season started. Lost to New England. Lost to Tennessee with Blaine Gabbert as their quarterback. Lost to the New York Giants. That's their only win of the year. That's how their first 3 weeks started. Now, since then, here's what they did. They beat Indy in overtime. That was the Frank Wright go-for-it-on-fourth-down game. The Texans punted the ball in overtime with 90 seconds left and won that game. The next week,
so they didn't win, they just didn't lose.
The next week, they beat Dallas in overtime. That was the Jason Garrett fourth down. I'm going to punt it at the opponent's 42-yard line. Trust my defense. Lost that way. The next week, they beat Buffalo on the Peterman pick six. They needed the Peterman pick six because it was 13-13 at home against Nate Peterman and Buffalo with 2 minutes left. And then last week they played well. They forced Blake Bortles and the Jags beat them 20-7. The defense crushed Blake Bortles. They benched him. Mm-hmm. But the point is, those three wins prior to last week, they all could have been losses and horrible losses. Losses to a Colts team that's not any good. Lost to Nate Peterman and the Buffalo Bills. So, I know they've won four in a row. This is not a good football team. What's in the Texans' favor is they're in a good football team in that division. The Titans are figuring out who they are. The Jags, there's going to be a mutiny against the quarterback. The Colts can't give Andrew Luck support. So I think the Texans will win tonight, but I saw they were 7.5-point favorites. They don't deserve to be more than touchdown favorites over anybody. And this team lost to the Giants now. They lost to the New York Giants, who are now trading away their team. So this game should be a close game this evening.
You like the Texans. What do you want to see tonight?
I want to see Deshaun Watson come back to that form that we saw last year when he was playing and he was healthy. I think if he can do that, if they can keep him standing upright, if he doesn't have to take the hits, get down when he does break the pocket and extend the plays and hit his guys, DeAndre Hopkins, Will Fuller, and all these pieces that he have, I think they will start to – these wins that you're talking about won't be fraudulent. And there's no such thing as a fraudulent win in the NFL. Oh, okay.
I believe the defense of the Dolphins tried to get after Deshaun. That offensive line, not good, as Nick said. You know, they're frauds, too, that offensive line. So they're going to try to change this game with turnovers and put pressure on Watson.
Bill O'Brien said after last week's game, I think the hardest thing to do in sports is win a game in the NFL. It's a miracle half the teams every Sunday do it. I don't know how it happens. It's the hardest thing to do in sports, yet every year happens 256 times. It's crazy.
Greg, stick around. Coming up, is there about to be a Raiders revolt against John Gruden? That's next on First Things First. Tomorrow night on Fox, the World Series shifts to L.A. for Game 3. Mookie Betts and the Red Sox take on Manny Machado and the Dodgers. It is all tomorrow at 7:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Dodgers are getting back into this. We're going 7.
Go ahead, Nick Rome. Tell us what's going to happen. And I picked Dodgers in 6. For the Dodgers to win in 6, how many games they got to lose, see? 2. So far, I'm not wrong yet. Eat it.
Before, let me just share with the audience. Forget John Gruden. This clown just told Jenna I'm always right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. What about
the
Dodgers?
I didn't say I'm always right. I said, of course.
See,
I'm right.
See, you and I are on a great... Right here.
I'm great on
right
facts.
Here.
It's predictions I struggle with at times. There's
back
a difference.
Back here with Greg
first
Jennings. Sorry, Greg. You have to be
against
part
Nick
of our...
Wright. Forget the Raiders revolt. First things first revolt.
Functional family. We're talking the fire sale. That is the Oakland Raiders. 6 games into Gruden's 10-year contract, $100 million contract. I just like to keep saying it. He is already cleaning house after shipping former Defensive Player of the Year Khalil Mack to the Bears. He now moved former first-round pick Amari Cooper to the Cowboys. And according to reports, players in the Oakland locker room are not happy. Gruden tried to explain his moves to the media yesterday.
But the players I talk to get it. Certainly, they get it. And they also know that every day is a new day. And sometimes the plans that you have aren't the plans that you think are going to be executed. Things come up, opportunities arise, and I think they understand, but you'd have to ask them. Today, I don't see us making any more trades. Certainly, I don't see us trading our quarterback.
Okay, it's hard to firmly believe everything Gruden is saying at this point, since he has made a number of interesting decisions. See, do the Raiders player have a right to be upset with the way Gruden's handled the housekeeping on this team so far?
Of course it is. I mean, NFL players expect life expectancy 3.4 years. This is the oldest team in the NFL. Now, you don't put the oldest team on the field unless you think we're going to win right now. So if you're a veteran player, and then now you're 2 months into the season, you're like, man, Khalil Mack's not here. Amari Cooper's not here. And the coach, they always try to say, I'll never lie to you. I'll never deceive you. Hey, John Gruden, you need to get that back into coaching. That's one of the things, that's one of the hallmarks of a coach, that you can trust him. He's going to do what is best for you as far as your career, what's best for the team, and he's going to develop your talent. I tell my kids all around the country, when you go to that building, Amari Cooper, all of them, I want you to submit your talent to that coach. But now you got a coach, you don't know if he has what's best interest of the players in mind. You know he doesn't, because you don't let Khalil Mack out. You don't let these guys that have sterling personalities, no character problems. We thought the Rams was going to have problems. We're stupid. Listen, we need as many dysfunctional guys as possible to put a football team, let alone guys who have stellar character. Khalil Mack, what about him? He's a great player. He's a great person on and off the field. Oh, okay. Amari Cooper, he's a great person. Hadn't lived up to his potential, but did make 2 of 4 Pro Bowls since he's been in the league. So, man, being truthful with people, being authentic with people, that's one of going to be John Gruden's problems. I didn't want to say anything, but I know guys that played for Gruden, and that was one of the problems when he last played. Now, when you're on TV, you can't see authenticity. People can lie to you, and it's a lot of people on TV doing it. I watch games with Nick. Nick look at me. I say, he's lying. He just made that up. And being a football coach is totally different, Greg. Greg, you call games. You know it. What he's doing in the interaction and the trust with human beings, that part right now, John Gruden has failed at.
That's 100%. You just preach. That is it. There is no trust in that locker room when it comes to John Gruden and those players. We can't trust you. I don't trust anything that comes out of your mouth right now. Because when he traded Khalil Mack, do we all remember what he said?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he didn't want to be here. Obviously, he didn't want to be here. What? What? Mm-hmm. Since when does a player hold out, not really want to be? No, they just want to get paid. They just want to get their value, what they feel like their worth is. The same with him as a head coach. So when I look at this situation, you're the oldest team in the NFL.
Right.
You're trading away not just young players, but cornerstones of your team.
Right.
Like, what are you doing? So, and then he says, I don't see us trading any more players. I definitely don't see us trading our quarterback. I don't even believe that.
Well, there are players in that locker room that have said and didn't want to be on record, hey, we thought some of us were going to be traded next year. Now we think, hey, we could be traded next week. You just have no idea at this point.
Listen, he clearly misled. I'm going to give you some names. Jordy Nelson, Jared Cook, Frosty Rucker,
mm-hmm.
Reggie Nelson, Leon Hall, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. These are all veterans that had options that signed with the Raiders this offseason. They didn't sign up to be in no damn rebuild like this.
No.
They bought into the hype that I – here's one weird thing when this show talks about Gruden and the Raiders. It might color your perspective and the audience's perspective of what the general opinion of this team was going to be this year. Because I was down on Derek Carr. C was down on Gruden to a degree. So we had tempered expectations. But when he got hired, what did Vegas say their win total would be? What did the public say they could do in the AFC West? What did my friends in Kansas City do? Call me saying, oh, man, the Raiders going to be good again. Another team. Like, it was beyond the pale as far as expectations for this team to be the worst team in football this year. Nobody had that on the board. Even this show that was skeptical of him. And so to have totally ripped it down to the studs this quickly, when that could not have been what you were selling, those veteran names I just told you. It also leads me to believe Gruden didn't even expect to do this. That's the problem with his offseason, not just commentary. You can lie in your comments. You can't lie in the draft, and you can't lie in your signings. And when you go out and actively make yourself the oldest team in the league, you are sending a signal, we think we can win right now. So that was an immediate miscalculation. And the other problem, if you're a Raider fan, even if you buy into, all right, 5 first-round picks over the next 2 years, like maybe you don't like Derek Carr either. Mike, another first-round pick for him. Look at Gruden's track record in Tampa when he got personnel control about who he drafted, how successful those picks were. Because it's one thing to have draft picks. It's another thing to draft Khalil Mack with them. It's another thing to draft the right people with them.
You don't think this is what John Gruden wanted all along, that this was part of the
not
plan?
Not all along. I think it became the plan.
When did you think that changed and why?
I think he...
them losses. Once they started losing, losing will bring out something.
But Khalil Mack was on the table before they even started.
I understand. The Khalil Mack thing was just John Gruden being stubborn and rebellious. It's like mm-hmm. he wanted to put his foot down and show who was in charge. Like, this is a new sheriff in charge. And it's just not the way you can do things. With a player like that.
To me, I believe John Gruden was disingenuous from the beginning. I believe he didn't have intentions to sign Khalil Mack. I believe that John Gruden wants to be the only star in Oakland. And anyone that approaches that, even being a quarterback, is going to be a problem. I believe they're going to have a problem with John Gruden. If John Gruden had a 3-year contract, they'd be talking about firing him right now. But the Raiders, they signed him to one of the most ridiculous contracts in the history of sports. And there's a saying, you stuck like Chuck? Man, the Raiders are stuck with John Gruden.
You did this to yourself.
Greg, I know you're a family man. When you're not here, you're in Minneapolis, so you don't spend a lot of time in Vegas, I would imagine. But if you did, and you went to Vegas, and you see those Raider billboards, who do you think's on them? It's Gruden. They ain't got no players left to put on. Like, they're marketing them as Gruden. And the point of him being wanting to be the only star and the contract, I think those are all good points. I also think... you also have to remember, how did his tenure end with the, as far as why did he get a 10-year contract? Well, Al Davis fired him. Mark Davis, the son, mm-hmm. who then wants to strike out on his own, not just be the son of one of the most important owners in sports history with a goofy haircut. He wants to be his own man. You know what? I'm going to sign this guy that my dad fired to a record-breaking contract and bring us back to the glory that he couldn't under my dad. Got us close, but couldn't. And now when you empower a guy like that, who I think has the ego that not only being a head – think about the ego trip of being a star head football coach. Every year people are like, oh, could we get Gruden? Could we get Gruden? And the ego nurturing that being on TV gives you. All those things come together, and then you get empowered with the best coaching contract in football history. You might think you can do just about anything. But they're the worst team in football, which is impossible, but it's true.
Thanks for hanging out with us today, Greg. Much appreciated. Got to take a break. Coming up, why are all eyes on Kyrie Irving? Next on First Things First. All right, Kyrie Irving has declared he's staying in Boston next season. Sort of heard that before a few times. But don't tell general managers around the league. According to reports, executives are keeping a close eye on Kyrie in hopes of swaying him to jump ship next summer. And with the Celtics just four games into the season, there is plenty of time for swaying. Healthy Boston team, early favorites to come out of the East this season. What's your reaction to this, Nick?
Well, if I may do my best Chris Carter impersonation, I am not surprised. I was not surprised at all, because this is what I've been saying. Like, Kyrie did that commitment ceremony to Boston. It was beautiful. It was lovely. I enjoyed seeing it. And then he played in New York, a game you were at, and after the game, told anyone that would listen, oh, yeah, I really thought about signing in New York. He ain't never been a free agent, by the way. Never once in his career been a free agent. So he just said, I really thought about it. Yeah, of course. Why would I not think about it? But, you know, I'm committed to Boston. Why would I want to leave here? Okay. I think that right now he thinks he's staying in Boston. I think that there was another very interesting nugget in that article by Brian Windhorst, who is as plugged in as anyone in the league this side of Adrian Wojnarowski, where he said there's a little skepticism or at least uncertainty whether or not Boston would offer Kyrie the full five-year max. And if you might be looking for an exit path, if you're Kyrie, from that commitment, if Boston doesn't offer me the full max, then if I'm Kyrie, I can say, well, yeah, I was committed if you guys respected me. Now, even if they offer him the full max, I don't think Kyrie knows where he's playing basketball next year. I've been saying this. Like, you don't have the personality Kyrie has, the history Kyrie has, as far as saying one thing and a few weeks later feeling another way, and know what you're going to do in July of 2019 in October of 2018. That's not me calling him a liar. That's not me saying he's disingenuous. It's just me looking at his track record and looking at how 20-something-year-old human beings work as far as what they feel today, not necessarily being what they're going to do in 6 months.
Yeah, I have two concerns as far as Kyrie and his ability to be able to stay there in Boston. Number one is seeing him at the Garden this weekend against the Knicks. I didn't think that his body was where. I've seen Kyrie play in person a lot. I've been at practice with Kyrie. And I just thought his body looked a little bit different. He didn't look in the type of shape. His legs didn't look like he looked like he had lost some weight, looked like he didn't have the type of explosiveness that we used to call him. As far as someone under 6 foot, the best finisher at the rim in the NBA, when was the last time we seen him with some of those finishes? So that right there I'm concerned about. And I'm concerned about the style of play. Because in Brad Stevens, if he's at his best, his offense is a movement offense where Kyrie is an isolation, take it off the bounce, I'm pretty, I'm the best handler that's ever played in the NBA. So there's a conflict in style. So as far as moving forward, how healthy he's going to be, all point guards wear out their bodies compared to bigger guys in the NBA. So I think there's legitimate concern with, is his future going to be in Boston? Because people in the NBA believe, that's why these reports keep coming out, that he will move on and the Knicks are a legitimate destination.
Could Boston do enough with their young guys coming up that maybe it wouldn't be a huge drop-off should Kyrie not stay in Boston?
Well, so this is the most interesting thing about the Celtics this year, is that there is no such thing as too much talent in the NBA. We know that. But there is such a thing as it being more difficult to coach this much talent than as opposed to knowing a team. You know what's been a really easy team despite all the drama to coach the last year? The Cleveland Cavaliers. You know why? Because they had one player you could rely on in LeBron. Everybody else just tried to do one thing well and have LeBron figure it out. When you've got Jason Tatum, who I think will win a scoring title in this league one day. Gordon Hayward, who's been an all-star. Kyrie Irving, who's been an MVP candidate. Al Horford, who's been an all-star. Jaylen Brown, who is ascending towards being an all-star. Terry Rozier, who is a very good backup guard who wants a big contract. Marcus Smart just got a big contract. Like, Marcus Morris just is waiting for his next contract. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you got to figure out whose turn is it. And it's always tough to play basketball if we feel like you got to take turns. The first year in Miami, one of the reasons it didn't work. LeBron takes a turn, Wade takes a turn, LeBron takes a turn, Bosch takes a turn. Like, and so that's what Boston has felt like early this year because they've been disappointing. I mean, Toronto came out of the gates smoking.
Blazing.
Milwaukee came out of the gates smoking. Boston's 2-2 and could easily be 1-3 given that game you were at in New York that they got away with the Jason Tatum game winner.
One thing I would be concerned as far as Boston moving forward is Golden State is out there in the West. And if I'm going to play them, I would like to have someone like Kyrie. Now, how they can get there, how the system evolves, those are the questions and stuff that are going to play out. But with Golden State, the way they are, I need Kyrie on my team if I'm Boston.
Because Kyrie's the only guy on the Celtics that you know the finals are not too big for.
Yes.
That you know matches up well against Golden State. And that's what concerned me about that Knicks game. Is even if Kyrie's struggling, even if Tatum's emerging, you know who needs to be taking the last shot for the Celtics? Is Kyrie Irving.
That was true.
That's his job. Now, Tatum hit it and made it. But if that becomes Tatum's role, then you start to ask yourself, what is Kyrie's role on the team? And right now, through four games, he hasn't found it.
You also want to make sure he can stay healthy. And I know the knee's been bothering you a lot, and he is just coming off the surgery that it came off in the offseason.
Yes.
So we'll wait and see. Got to take a break. Coming up, Villanova head coach Jay Wright. Still tall, still well-dressed, still walking.
He's here? It's not via Skype?
Back here, first things first, we're joined by Villanova head coach, and if I'm being honest, one of our favorite guests, Jay Wright.
Nice.
All about being
good
honest,
buddy.
Jay. Thanks, coach.
Coach giving us a hard time. He said we were hard on our guests and everything.
Well, I saw you giving Jenna some grief about Jenna. That's Jay's guy.
Oh, yeah.
That was rough on my man, Cooley.
Providence head coach Ed Cooley was here.
We watch you in the morning. That's I saw it. That's
love that.
I caught you.
Thank you, coach.
You guys are doing well.
What's the offseason been like for you, coach, since winning the national title, besides getting up, watching 3 hours of our show, and then doing nothing the rest of the day?
Watch FS1 in the morning. Watch you guys in the morning. It's been cool this year. It's been calmer. I think we learned a little bit from 16 how to handle a little bit better, not do everything. And we have a lot of new guys. So it's not been as crazy as after 16.
What a great thing to be able to say is my experience from winning the previous national title has helped me learn how to deal with this one.
Yep.
But that's actually something we talk about in the NFL a lot.
All the time.
About how the team that every year, no matter how successful they were the previous year, it starts off the year fresh as the Patriots.
Yeah, man.
And the one year they didn't was the year after their first championship. They didn't necessarily deal with that the best. The Eagles are dealing with
it. My Eagles, man, they don't have their offensive coordinator. They don't have their quarterback coach. Nobody talks about that.
Mm-hmm.
They lost a lot of good players. They have new players in there. Even with Wentz, he wasn't on that team. I mean, he wasn't playing, you know?
Yes.
There's a lot of change. And the other teams, even though they didn't win the Super Bowl, they have been playing together and they have everybody back. You know, like Los Angeles you were talking about.
Right.
So it is. It's hard, man. It's really hard. And we're that way. We have five new guys coming back. You know, we have no juniors, two seniors. So it's just different. And as long as you accept that and you can't think in your mind, we are the defending national champions. We're not. Those guys are gone. We're a different team.
The approach has to be the same. Even if you have new guys, the infrastructure is there, right?
The culture, the game plan,
all of it. And it has to be the same.
It is. But the players win it. Like, you win it because of the players. Four of those guys are gone. And the four of those guys were on the – three of the four that went to the NBA were on the 16 national championship team.
Mm.
So those guys had great experience. So we lost a lot of that. Now, what the young guys bring is a fresh approach. You know, they're excited.
Yes.
So that's pretty cool. So it's – but you're right, Jenna. The approach is the same, but the players are different and the players are the ones that win it.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Doug Peterson there because I think that Doug got a lot of respect for what he's doing, but I think he is still learning how to be an NFL coach and a championship coach.
Yeah.
Of course. But with winning, we got one coach who won, has won a couple, in you, who said, no, I'm not the champ. Doug Peterson said, I am the champ, and we're trying to defend it. You're both trying to replace a lot of things. Him as far as coaching, you're trying to replace senior and productivity. Give me some of the intangibles in losing to these NBA guys, things that you have to replace, not just jump shooting. What about mental toughness? What are some of the things for your program that people don't see that you have to replace right now?
Yeah, that's the key, Chris. Like we had three first-round draft choices. Someone said, oh, you had three first-round draft choices. The hardest guy to replace is the guy who was a second-round draft choice, Jalen Brunson, came to practice, came in the locker room 2 hours before practice, had eaten well, was prepared for practice, got on the floor early, knew everything we did, made sure he talked to the young guys when they stepped on the court, told them what to do before practice ever started.
A mini J.
He was. I miss him. The other guy, I miss them all. I mean, they're like your sons, but he was the leader, and he was the coach on the floor, truly. So that's, you can't replace that until Phil Booth is starting to take that on, you know, right now. Colin Gillespie, but they haven't done it. Jalen did it on a 16 national championship team, did it in 17 on the number one team in the country, and then did it on the 18 national championship team.
And they're also, when you have the run you guys had, I'm sure throughout the year, even though you're not talking about it with the players, amongst the coaches, you have a good idea. Of course, you're going to lose your seniors, but you also who might leave early. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm guessing halfway through the year, you didn't think Dante was going to leave her.
No.
I didn't, during the tournament, I didn't think he was going to leave early.
Same with us.
And then he had the unbelievable run throughout the tournament. He great workouts, turned himself into almost a lottery pick, just right outside the lottery. But now all of a sudden, as far as recruiting goes, as far as when you're preparing for this upcoming season, there's a hole you have to fill you weren't expecting to have to fill.
Right. Exactly. We call it roster structuring. So we try to see, you know, we talked to the NBA guys, right? When do you think this guy will come out? When do you think this guy? And we're good, you know. We thought we would have Omari Spellman and Dante for one more year.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And even after the Michigan game, they weren't projected first-round picks, either one of them. Now, Jalen and Mikhail could have came back for another year. They had another year's eligibility, but they graduated. So we knew they were going. But even when they were going through the process, they were saying to us, like, hey, I love college, man. If I'm not a first-round pick, I'm good. So, but once they started working out and guys saw them, the NBA guys were calling us back saying, hey, I'm going to take this guy in the first round.
People didn't know Dante was such a great athlete. Right. Like, I think there was maybe a little stereotyping going, and people saw, and then all of a sudden you saw his measurables. You're like, oh, my God.
He was number one in the combine with vertical jump. As soon as he did that, he measured that. We're like, all right, this is over.
Yeah, Nick saw that one time, and he was instantly in love with
him. you know, Coach, we had you out here last year, and we said, how does the Big East look? And you said it's going to be competitive, it's going to be tough, and then you rolled over everybody, and you won the national title. So I'm going to ask you again, because maybe it'll be good luck for you. How does the Big East look this year?
But we didn't win the regular season championship.
No, you didn't.
And we were picked preseason number one. Now, it'll be interesting to see where we come out today, because I think we're a young team. But we were picked number one. Xavier won the regular season championship. And then we won the Big East championship at Madison Square Garden in an overtime game against Providence. Mm-hmm. That we could easily lost it. Providence was at that point just as good as us, and that proves when you go into the NCAA tournament, it's about matchups, how you're playing. So I look at it like we went through the NCAA tournament. We won, I think, every game by double figures, and we won the Big East championship game in overtime by one. That tells you enough about the Big East. I think it's going to be the same this year. I think we have a lot more balance. We don't have as much star power early going into the season, but I think by the end of the year, you're going to see some great players emerge.
Coach, we have another great friend of the show in Tom Izzo, and his team a lot like yours because championship pedigree, there's a great deal of respect. Even with you losing all these players to the NBA, they still have you ranked in the top 10. I know you're like, listen, these are young kids and everything. Where do you think, what is the potential for this roster, Jay? Honestly. Yeah.
No, you're right, Chris. I get it. You know, we're top 10 per season. I think that's based on our past. All right? That's based on, I think, people saying, okay, they will develop during the year. Now, we got to do that, right? I think we have two of the best players in college basketball in Phil Booth and Eric Paschal. Those two, you know, Phil Booth played in two national championship games. There's not a lot of guys in college basketball that do that.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric Paschal, you know, NBA guys are saying is a projected first-round pick. So we got two great players. Now, we have no juniors. Our sophomore class, we got to develop. Our freshmen we have to develop. But by the end, we could be a team that contends for a Big East championship by the end.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
We're going to have to grow into that one this year. We're not starting that way.
Well, you guys are in a very unique position amongst programs that are now like the new age blue bloods. Like, I understand, like, Kansas, Kentucky, UCLA, but old mm-hmm. North Carolina. But you win two titles in 3 years, have the success you guys have. You're in that echelon. But you guys are not a one-and-done factory right. the way some of these other where it says, okay, who's the top 10 players? You're going to Kentucky, Carolina, Duke. And so because of that, you have the ability to have a guy like Phil Booth.
Right.
You have the ability to have a guy like Eric Pascal where right. you have quality seniors. I watched Frank Mason
yeah.
at Kansas. Like, he was not going to be – he was always going to be a fringe NBA guy because of his height. But what that also means is he's going to play 4 years of college basketball, exactly. and by his senior year, he's a grown-up, yeah. and he's playing against mm-hmm. kids. Like, that along with your experience, I think even if you don't have the talent of the previous year's roster, that gives you guys an enormous edge against some – I mean, you guys play Kansas this year. You play Michigan in the national championship rematch. That gives you guys an edge some of the other prestige programs don't have, right?
Yeah, I hope so. I do. We count on that. That's why I talked about our roster structuring. We try to figure out, you know, when will this guy – if they leave early, like this year, Dante and Amari left a year earlier than we thought. That's a good thing. Good for them. Good yeah. for them, good for us. We won a championship because they were so good. But we try to cover for that, and we kind of got they went a little early and we weren't prepared mm-hmm. because we have no juniors.
Right.
Right. So our sophomores were guys that we didn't think were going to have to step up till next year. But that's all right. That's a good problem to have. So if our sophomore class can play a little older, Demir Cosby, Roundtree, Colin Gillespie, Jermaine Samuels, Dylan Painter, that would get us by the end of the year to be an old team again, and we got a shot to be good.
Coach, I know you spend 3 hours watching the show, then you spend another probably 4 hours game planning for your day and for the team and all of it. But how far and how deep do you start following your old players into the NBA? Do you watch them? Do you follow what they're doing? Are you still in touch with them, anyone in particular?
Yeah, we do. And even in the preseason, we're watching preseason games. I'm tweeting about, you know, somebody got a lot of minutes, which is crazy. I know people got to be saying, like, this is preseason. This doesn't matter. I follow them all the time. Like, last night I saw that Josh Hart was playing against Mikal Bridges.
Oh, yeah,
he got the start, and they got the win.
Yeah.
And he said something before the game about going at Mikal, and it just cracked me up because –
Did it take you back to your gym?
It did, because those two used to kill each other in practice. And Mikal was the young boy, and Josh was the old boy. And he would physically – if Mikal would embarrass him, which he would sometimes, he would physically go after him on the next play. We'd watch him. I go, Josh is going to chase him down.
Right.
He's going to chase him down. So to see them go at it now, Omari Spellman played against Jalen Brunson last
yeah.
night.
Yeah.
And they send us pictures, like they'll take pictures before the game.
Mm-hmm.
And we love that stuff.
Well,
we love them staying tight.
All your guys are on team. Now, listen, I'm an NBA nerd, so I find almost every team interesting.
No, coach, everything he does is nerdy.
Okay.
So that's why we have
he's
you on the show.
Translating for it.
That's why we got you to balance them out, man.
But if I'm looking at your guys' draft in the last 5 years, they're all on interesting teams. You mentioned yeah. Mikal, who was drafted by Philly and then immediately traded to Phoenix. He's on a team with the number one pick of the draft. He's on a team that has got a bunch of young talent but doesn't know who they are. Dante's on a team with maybe the most fun player in the league to watch
yeah,
in Giannis.
I watched
him
last
that is – guys like that don't go to college. Like, they don't exist in college basketball. Like,
right.
the athletic raw freak that is
right. –
Embiid did, but kind of.
Half a year.
When you watch a guy like Giannis, what are you seeing as a coach?
Man, as a coach, you're saying I'd love to have that guy – because not his length and ability is incredible, but when you listen to him talk, he's so humble and coachable. Mm-hmm. You had a great line earlier in the show when you said, I tell my young guys to give up their talent. Submit your talent to the coach.
To that coach.
There's not a lot of guys that do that, as you know, a lot of great ones. They think, all right, I got a lot of talent. The coach has to deal with me.
Mm-hmm.
Giannis looks like he's improving every year. He's getting better and better. And I think he's going to get a consistent three-point shot soon, and it's going to be over. That dude's incredible.
He'll be the best player. If that happens, he'll be the best player in the league. Amari's on a team with Trae Young. Jalen's with Doncic. But Josh Hart, you know him. If he stays in that starting lineup, he's entering the crucible now. Those yeah. Laker games are going to be dissected every yeah. single night on every show. How equipped do you think he is for that?
He is the
out of all your guys, he the best guy to run with LeBron with that scrutiny?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he has incredible confidence. He is the best competitor. As you know, all great players, he's right on that edge of being too competitive. Mm. Like, he's the only guy in practice sometimes I have to discipline because he was too competitive. I talk about going after, like, if Mikhail blocked his shot and was going on a breakaway, I was afraid he was going to take out Mikhail on the play, physically.
Yeah, that's how I do.
So, but that's what, when you play in pro sports, I mean, that's what it is. I mean,
absolutely.
Those guys are killers. And Josh has that. But off the court, greatest kid in the world.
Awesome.
Coach, thank you so much for hanging out with
Always
us.
Always good seeing you guys.
Much appreciated. A lot of fun.
Coach, is this new? I mean, you won national championship. Somebody still dressing
you? I knew you were going to
I'm sure they made you up a couple new ones for the season.
We got a couple new ones coming.
Much this more is the old version. First, right after this. By former Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott, the man with many takes. How are you, Bart?
No doubt.
Oh, no, no, you can get whatever you want, man. They had three people coming here trying to take your spot. I'm like, man, we got to wait on
air high fire. I am feeling the power pony, by the way.
You are? Watch
power
this.
Power pony.
Whoop, whoop. Did I hurt you? You're okay?
What was that?
He said he felt the power pony.
Okay, I got you.
I think I whipped my neck out. Yep. Let's
Great athlete next
Bart,
time.
You know what, Nick? The Giants are 1-6 and firmly sitting in the basement of the NFC East, which means no one is safe. First big blue trade of former first-round pick Eli Apple to the Saints, and then move former first-team All-Pro Damon Snacks Harrison to the Detroit Lions. Let the rebuild begin. Here's head coach Pat Shurmur on the recent moves.
Listen, we were presented with some deals. We made a couple trades, and we're moving on. And for the guys that play those positions, it gives them an opportunity to get more reps and show us what they can do. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what our guys can do. You know, we're always looking for ways to improve the roster. My concern, obviously, is getting the team ready to play this week and beyond. And but we all know there are short-term and long-term things that go on.
All right, Bart, what do you think about what's going on with the Giants?
I tell you what, Sean Spicer is sitting there like, ooh, because he's out there taking one for the team, right?
Right.
This is something that Gettleman put together. He sold us and he told us that, hey, this team was ready to win right now.
Yeah.
Right? That's why you make these finishing pieces. That's why you go out with your number two pick and you say, okay.
You don't get a quarterback.
You don't get a quarterback. You go get Saquon Barkley. That's why you go out and you get a Nate Solder because you think you're close. Nah. No, close only counts in horseshoes. And I think, you know, he's out there having to take the brunt of all the, you know, he doesn't understand how the New York media works. You know, you can't just come out. We're too smart for that. I understand you guys are a national show.
Yes.
But this is a local story right here for right now. And this is a fire sale. And he lied to us. And somebody's got to be held accountable. We've replaced general managers, replaced head coaches.
But Shurmur didn't lie.
McAdoo was smiling. McAdoo was like, yep, told you he was done.
Well, but Shurmur didn't lie. There's a lot of criticism to be laid at the feet of a lot of people. I don't know how we can blame Pat Shurmur for much of any of this right now. Pat Shurmur does not pick the players. He does not pick the draft picks. He had no other option than Eli at quarterback. The one mandate it seemed he had coming into the year was Eli's got to be the quarterback because the last coach, part of the reason he got fired was he benched Eli.
That's a whole nother story, right? Because I wonder, you know, did Patricia not take this job because they were saying, okay, whoever comes in and takes this job, you're stuck with Eli Manning, understanding that everybody else had already knew that Eli was past his prime. This is a team that was sold that they can win now. This team is going to be in a real rebuilding mode, and it's going to take a long time. Gettleman came in and said he doesn't want to be in quarterback hell. Guess what? You're front smack dead in quarterback hell.
But I think it's different than what's happening in Oakland. Maybe Gettleman thought they could win with Eli Manning. Maybe they thought Eli had at least one more year left, not playing his best, but with a wide receiver and a star running back. And they thought Nate Solder could do more with that line, that the pieces were just firmly enough in place that they could do something.
Yeah, they thought so. But for me, you know, I come from the old school. You know, I made plenty of mistakes. And the way to get from that mistake is just admitting what you did, see where you went wrong, and then legitimately try to rectify it by changing your decision-making going forward. Like, you do have new information, and that's where the Giants are. I believe that Dave Gettleman, they started out a lot like me. Eli still got a lot left in him. They can support him, get Nate Solder, get some other pieces. They should support him. Hey, I was wrong. I'm not addressing the media. I'm not the head coach. So how he goes about it's going to be a little bit different. But if I was doing it, I would just admit I was wrong, a lot like John Gruden. I'm getting ready to change this ship. I got to rebuild now, and I got serious, serious concerns moving forward.
Can we use the T word? Is it time to use the T word? Because they're tanking. And they can say they're not tanking, they're tanking. And this is how you competitively tank. You start selling off pieces. And then you want to say you're not tanking. You know, watch in a couple of weeks. Some guys are going to start going on IR. Right? Oh. Because guys are going to start, oh, my thumb, your thumb hurts, right? And but what happened is they can't tank better than the Oakland Raiders. The Oakland Raiders already started the process because they recognized in training camp that this team wasn't where it needs to be. They're behind the process. Now they're hoping that they can find a way to get up to the top to maybe take Herbert, who may stay in.
Well, Herbert might not even come out.
Right. So then next year, you know, so now you're 2 years behind, right? So now we're in rebuild mode, right? The Jets are ahead because they took their quarterback now. So they're 2 years ahead of the Giants. So now you're waiting and hoping that a quarterback falls to you. So now you're saying, do I get a retread? Yeah, okay, so now what's going to happen now? Odell Beckham wants to be a star. You can't be a star if you're not in the playoffs. So now you got a bad locker room, right? Because he's out there about his. Everybody out there is Roscoe Jenkins, team of me. I'm out there trying to make sure I eat. Yep. I'm not worried about nobody
else.
So what happens now, this locker room is going to be, you know, fractured. And listen, we ain't even went trick-or-treating yet. And they're done for the second year in a row. They're done before Halloween. And now you have 10 weeks. Let me tell you, the pods are starting to be ordered. The U-Hauls are starting to be packed. These guys are going to melon in. It's only going to go from bad to worse.
Yeah, I think Bart makes a couple good points here that we should watch. The number one point being, you can tank in the NBA. Yeah, write that down.
Yes.
You can tank in the NBA.
You don't get to say that. That's Bart's line. You don't tell me to write stuff.
You can rent it. He's the OG.
I'm telling him when you ain't here.
Okay, go ahead.
And the reason why,
in the NBA.
Because it's a stat-driven league. Mm-hmm. Guys are playing. And it's not a whole bunch about team. It's about individuals playing.
And you ain't going to get killed.
Right. No, absolutely. You're not going to get hurt. It's not as if I'm in the NBA and I'm a two guard, if the point guard is not good, it's not going to affect me so much. Now, if I'm a wide receiver and I got a less than up to par quarterback, if I'm a running back, I got a left guard. Like, these things affect your career. And Bart is right. I'm going to start looking after myself. If I'm in that locker room and if I'm a wide receiver, now, you think we're selfish on a regular team, on a team that's tanking, I got to get my numbers. That's the only – you talking about Odell Beckham was on pace to be one of the greatest receivers ever. Well, look what happened the last 2 years. Didn't I tell you it was going to be hard to keep that pace?
Right.
I said, Nick, I made 8 straight Pro Bowls, man. I don't even know how I did it. I said, there's no way Odell will be able to do that. It's hard to do it. Too many things can happen. And now you're tanking, and let me tell you the one voice that was not – I didn't hear anyone say this yesterday. Bart kind of alluded to it. There's one guy in that locker room can talk to OBJ, and you just sent him to Detroit. So now when the kid has a tincture tantrum in the aisle, he wants candy, he wants cereal, he wants something else in the cart, who do you send to talk to him? Because we didn't have a general manager fired. We didn't have 2 head coaches fired because they didn't do the right thing. And now you sent the one guy, and you know how much he trusts Odell? Odell is babysitting his kids. That lets you know that he's got a speaking voice in Odell's life. And for him to trust him like that, these are things that I was concerned about when I left Minnesota and they said the team was Dante Culpepper's and Randy Moss's. I said, okay, all right, I'm just going to tell you something. You need some leadership around these good young players so that they become great.
Listen, you said something a few minutes ago that's important. You judged the Giants a certain way. You can now, 2 months later, look at it and say, I was wrong. And you know what? Because of what your job is and our jobs are, it's as simple as that. I thought it was this. I was wrong. Mm-hmm. If I misled the audience, my apologies. Gettleman's different. Gettleman misjudged it, and due to that misjudgment, changed the course of their franchise forever.
Gettleman said this pick is so easy that my mother would know which player to pick at number 2.
And so let me ask you this now. All the teams that picked after the Giants that took a quarterback. Right now, Giants call them, hey, Jets, we want to do Barkley for Darnold.
No
you
bueno.
Interested?
No bueno.
Hey, Bill, even the Bills, we want to do Barkley for Josh Allen. Nah, we know he might need Tommy John, but we're still going to play this one out. Hey, Cardinals, we want to do Barkley for Josh Rosen. You interested? No chance. So when it's one thing to misjudge it as an analyst. It's another thing to misjudge it not only as the GM, But the single most important offseason Dave Gettleman will ever have as the Giants general manager is the one he already had. And what he did in that offseason was everything was we can win now. We know Odell is, given the guy's $60 million guaranteed, probably isn't going to temper his emotion. We're going to do it. We're going to overpay for Nate Solder. We're going to use a high second-round pick on a guard to help out. You're right, to help out Eli. We are not even going to entertain moving on from Eli. We're not going to move any of these high-priced defenders when their value was higher because they had a full season to go.
And they doubled down on Eli when they cut Davis Webb.
Yeah, but this is why they have to trade all defensive players, right? Because you have to protect your franchise. And right now the franchise is Saquon Barkley and Odell Beckham. Because if you start trading them, listen, Saquon he only knows one speed. He's out there trying to win Rookie of the Year because he wants 1 million Twitter followers, which he already has, but he probably wants 5 million now, right? Mm-hmm. So now he's going to be out there. What happens is you start trading away the bad offensive players you have, which I don't know who would even want half of them other than the receivers. You risk hurting your franchise player because, like you said, this isn't basketball. Mm-hmm. This guy get hurt.
No, the guys start melding in, start going IR. Jack Rabbit.
Jack Rabbit or Olivier Vernon. On my show, we had to have a cap guy on because they had to go snacks Eli Apple for the dead money. So now they can absorb. Now they can absorb some more money now. So now the next move, they're not done. You know, the next move is probably Jack Rabbit or
Jack Rabbit
Vernon.
To the Chiefs.
Jenkins. Right. They have to blow it all up. You know, but what happened is Gettleman came in here and he said, listen, this team isn't far away. I'm an old man. So that showed me that he was impatient because he wasn't really ready to have a true assessment. And we asked him, we said, you got a decision on Eli? He's like, well, I watched the Philadelphia game. You told me one game where he looked good late in the season. You haven't watched the other games? Oh, I'm going to watch the other games. You know, he had already had his mind made up that he was going to go with Eli Manning because he was an old man. He didn't want to go through the process of trying to get a quarterback. He didn't want to be in quarterback hell. Now he's in quarterback hell, and he has problems in his locker room because Odell is going to be a problem, but they can't trade him because he's $40 million of dead money.
No,
if they trade
never,
him
they
next 2 years,
right.
And how are you going to explain that to Mara?
There's also a lot of pressure, at least here in New York, to treat Eli Manning very well because you saw the backlash what happened last year when he got benched. It was everyone else but him. This year when he's playing terribly, I know his line is tough. It's everyone else's
Listen
fault
to the
but
fans,
Eli.
You'll become one.
But maybe Dave Gettleman succumbed a little bit to that. Heard from the Manning family. He wanted so much for this to work out that it was clouded.
Didn't they run Phil Sims out of town? I didn't see nobody playing the world's smallest violin for him. And he basically won 2 Super Bowls. Yeah, and they cut him his Pro Bowl year.
That's the first family of football, though. You need to consider some stuff.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. And catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.